YPG's Desert Rats tested weapons of war so they'd work when soldiers' lives depended on them. Thousands of veterans walk the earth today thanks to their work. After decades of service, all that's left is testament. Desert Rat Testament is a monthly anthology that collects the stories and recollections of retired Yuma Proving Ground employees of decades-long service.
Hello, I'm Mark Schauer. Wayne Shoulders' tenure at YPG began as an artilleryman in uniform in the early 1980s. Returning to the post as a civilian after his Second Army enlistment, he worked testing artillery here for more than three decades, ultimately as the chief of the armament branch.
Were you in Korea when you first got orders to come to Yuma Proving Ground?
Yeah, and it was dead of winter. And I came there with like 10 other soldiers. They all had orders first thing in the morning, first formation of the day. And only one person didn't get orders, and it was me. And I was not happy. So the last formation of the day, not lunch or anything, first sergeant comes out and he says, oh yeah, forgot to tell you guys, because there was 10 of us. Nine other guys had orders to go all over the country, you know. And we were out there freezing to death. And he says, got one other guy, one more set of orders. And so he called me up there and he said, this guy is going to the most cushy job in the Army, especially in artillery. This guy's going to Arizona. And I almost jumped for joy right then. It was so cold now. But he said, yeah, he's going to work at a proving ground. He's going to work with civilians. You know, what a get over. What a gig, you know. And I ran straight to the library. That was before internet and all that, of course. I ran straight to the library. I knew where Arizona was, but I'd never heard of Yuma. So I'd heard of Johnny Yuma, the old cowboy show. So I went and looked it up, and man, I was just like arms in the air, like, hey, okay, here we go. So when I showed up here, it was interesting. It was, I believe, the 4th of January, 1984. I was 19. But I showed up, and I drove in the main post. I was wearing flip-flops, shorts, and a tank top in January, and it was wonderful. And I walked in the orderly room like that and out in the hallway there. Well, right outside the orderly room on 601, I think it is, that building over there. There was two E7s standing there. They just so happened to be from the gunner shop. I didn't know them. I never met them. And one of them just stopped and looked at me. He says, you must be the new gunner. And then I said, what? I said, I'm an artillery guy. He says, oh yeah, that's what I'm talking about. And he said, I could tell by looking at you. And I said, okay, here I am. Where do I report in at? And that's how I got started anyway.
Now, you were in the old barracks they tore down about 2009, 2010.
I spent about a month in there because I was married, but my wife wasn't here yet. So I spent about a month in that barracks.
It had a crack even then.
Yeah, it had a crack. Yep. You could see through it, you know. But they had one thing in there that a lot of people, you know, unless they've been here a long time, wouldn't know, is they had beer machines in the day room, in the little orderly room when you first went in. So I go in there. My first night, I'm like, well, you're nothing to do. I'll go down and watch TV with the guys in the day room. And there's like 10 or 15 guys in there. And they're all sitting shoulder to shoulder on one end of those cheapo army couches, you know, right next to the beer machine and stuff and the Coke machine. And I walked in there. I was like, man, what kind of unit is this? You know, I sat on the far end. Then a minute or two later, there was this whirling sound and a beer fell out and they all dove for it. So I was like, oh, okay, these guys are all right. So that's what guys did for a pastime back then and watch TV. Yeah.
Your first year here, you were Soldier of the Year?
Yeah, I think so in 84.
And a year after that, you were NCO of the Year.
Yeah. Yeah, I made rank pretty quick here. I was busting butt, but it was fun.
Was this your last duty station in uniform?
No. No, I spent almost 4 years, right at 4 years in Hawaii, Schofield Barracks, 2nd and 11th. I was over there and I was fixing to re-enlist, go over 10. And I actually got a phone call from one of the gun crew leaders, one of the gunners from over here, civilian. Out of the blue, I hadn't talked to him in 4 years, you know, none of these guys. And he called me and says, hey, what are you doing? And I said, well, I'm fixing to re-enlist. He said, you want a civilian job out here? I really liked it when I was stationed out here. It was really nice. My wife liked Yuma. I liked Yuma. Kind of outdoors guy, you know. Grew up in the woods, in the swamps. So I just kind of liked it because it was different. I was like, well, I hadn't really thought of that. I was going to re-enlist. I really liked the Army. I was doing well. But my wife was concerned about raising the kids, and they were like 3 and 4. She said, maybe you ought to check that out, you know, as an alternate possibility. So I took a long weekend of leave and hopped on a Mac flight with one of my guys from the crew that just wanted to go along for the ride, and flew down here, flew to Seattle, or actually San Francisco, I think, and drove down. So we had a nice little kind of mini vacation, came down here, filled out the paperwork, went back to Hawaii, and kind of got the call later that, yeah, this is looking like it's going to go through. So, you know, I went ahead and got out, came out.
Even when you started here as a civilian, there were a lot more soldiers at YPG than there are today.
Yeah, when I was stationed here, it was, I don't remember the actual numbers, but it was, I almost want to say half and half. It's been a long time. I can't remember too much. But yeah, we had a lot of soldiers. For instance, the gunner shop, you know, the artillery shop was, we probably had 20 soldiers and about maybe 15 or so civilians, I think, something like that. So all the crews were government civilians. You know, they'd have like two of those guys on a crew, then two GIs. You know, they liked having the GIs because we was all 17, 24 years old and could handle the long, hard days. And they just could stand there and point fingers most of the time. Just kidding. They worked pretty hard.
But back then it was like, what, the M198 was the 155 officer?
Yep. We had a little bit of everything because we had all the legacy stuff was still in the Army at the time. They were still units with 8-inch, with 102s, with 101s even, the 105 versions, 198s. We still had M114s here, the pig irons, like on display over on KFR when you go in the gate. We still had those. Had the 115, the big 8-wheeled towed howitzers from World War II in Korea. We had 108s, which were like a 109, the Paladin looking with a 105 cannon in it. We had 175s, which were the 8-inch with a 175-millimeter tube on it. A lot of old stuff, 4-deuce mortars, M29 mortars, all that stuff that was legacy. It was, they were still in the units. They were just phasing a lot of that stuff out, so... Yeah, when I first got here, we had a wide variety of weapons, and it's narrowed down over the years as the Army's kind of culled a lot of stuff out to the basics that we have now.
And they thought of it, a lot of interesting things that were never fielded, like Crusader,
yeah,
Endless Sea.
Yeah, there was a lot of things over the years that didn't make the cut, the final cut that we spent a lot of time with. I think they got a lot of good technology out of a lot of that, and some of the maybe components or ideas was reused or actually made it to other platforms. But yeah, when I first got here, YPG was heavily involved in Apache and M1 and Bradley testing also, as well as all the DU testing for the tanks. And I cut my teeth on the GP20 and GP17, you know, DU testing back in the day. Me and like Mike Stanton, we spent the best years of our life out there.
Now, you've talked a lot in the past with me about how if you're active duty, you're an artilleryman, you're probably on one system. If you work as a gunner out here, you're working on 15, 20 different things, including foreign artillery, legacy artillery.
Yeah, that's true. It's when I first came in and was stationed at Yuma, it was even more so true because, like I said, we had all those legacy systems you had to learn. And you still had the foreign and, you know, other things like that in the private industry stuff they were working on. But yeah, most units back, there were still a wider variety of guns available. If you were artillery, if you spent like 8 or 10 years in, you might see as many as 5 or 6 systems, you know, back then in the '70s and '80s and all that. But nowadays, you know, all the units are either going to be lightweight howitzer, towed howitzer. They're going to be Paladins, A7 type guns, and they're going to be M119s. They've turned everything else in. There's a good chance right now, depending on what type of unit you're in, if you're in a, like my last unit was, you know, air assault, it was light infantry over in Hawaii. So the choices were lightweight howitzer or, you know, M119. So, most of those guys that are in now, they're going to see one, maybe two systems in their career that they get stationed on.
Now, the ranges of artillery today compared to when you were active duty, astounding amount of capability now.
Yeah, especially with their R&D stuff. You know, we'll see where it goes when they start fielding some of this, but yeah, practically double.
Even things like guided rounds, Excalibur and so on.
Yeah, even the mortars. You know, the mortars now are guided and glide technology and different things and a little steerable, we'll say, that get a little more range out of them, a little more powder. Powder changes have made a difference too, you know, and bullet shapes, a lot of things.
Things like PGK, you saw it at the at the ground floor.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's one of the most amazing technologies they have, because that enabled dumb bombs, as they call them, just regular rounds, to have such an effective radius of impact compared to just shooting non-guided rounds at all that would just go wherever they want, wherever winds blow them, I guess you'd say. The PGK had the accuracy. You could probably get away with one round for every 10 you used to shoot, I would almost say, to be able to get on target and get effects.
How many years were you a civilian worker before you became chief of weapons operation?
Man, you're making me think now a little bit. About 10 years.
I mean, was it hard making the transition?
I mean, I was kind of studious, I guess you'd say, and took an interest. If I had spare time or got back in the rear on a slow day or something like that, I helped out and kind of paid attention and learned. So I kind of like, you know, little new challenge things and, you know, stuff like that. So that made it interesting. And I was up for the challenge, I guess you'd say, a little bit. But, and I don't know, I think if I did anything right over the years, most of the time it was probably dealing with people. I think I did okay there. I've got my faults, but, you know, I think I did okay. I was able to communicate and get along with people pretty well and convince them to do what you need to done, which is what leadership is, you know, convince people to do what needs to be done in the most effective way, most expedient way, and the safest way, and all that kind of stuff. But it was a big learning curve because, you know, I had spent a lot of time as a leader in the Army. It's not that much different, but with civilians, it is different. A lot of the budgets and weird taskers that you don't expect, you know, you learn a lot. You learn a lot of technical stuff too. And you see so many, you're responsible for so many things and so much knowledge that you have to build up, you know, all the SOPs and LOIs for all the systems and learn all the TMs and learn the systems themselves and learn all the ammunition, learn the range, learn the ins and outs of the range, safety, security. I could go on. It's a lot. It's a big learning curve for just about any of these shops out here. But if you're running that shop where you're dealing with explosives and people's lives, it's a big learning curve. I got a little better as time went on. First 5 years, maybe I would say I made maybe one or two mistakes, but I recovered. I had some help from the guys.
You were always extremely supportive of the public outreach mission of YPG too.
That made it fun and showcase what we did a little bit. I was always proud to be a soldier or be associated with the Army, especially if there were Marines involved. No, I was really proud to do that. And you know, that's rubbed off on the guys. Most of the guys I work with out there at KFR and the shop, depending on what shop they're in, but especially the gunner shop, have a lot of pride and patriotism and, you know, pride in YPG and what we do. They like to show the community.
Is it hard for you to walk away after all these years?
I don't know, because I'm going to run. No, it's not. It's not. I think it's time for me. I'm a guy of many hobbies and many interests. I was always doing a lot outside of work, and I have a lot of plans. I got a lot of stuff I'm going to be doing. So I don't think it'll be hard for me.
Are you going to keep up with YPG at all?
Yeah, I'm staying local. I'm sure I'll, you know, stay in touch with the guys and different things going on. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see where it goes from here.
No, Wayne, it's really good talking with you.
I appreciate working with you all these years. I mean, like I said, you're pretty supportive of us. Glad I could help out.
For as long as the United States has a military, Yuma Proving Ground will be vital to the national defense. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time on The Testament.